I'm Rob Skinner, and this is the Rob Skinner Podcast. Recently, I was searching for a new book to listen to on my Audible account. I typed in podcasting, and one of the recommendations that popped up was The Podcaster's Playbook by John Stonge. I listened to that, and what blew me away was the author, John Stonge, is a pastor for a small community church in Pennsylvania. He started posting YouTube videos and then writing a blog, and then a podcast, and then books. One of his podcasts has well over 1 million downloads, and he's been contracted to write books by a major book publisher. He has an interest in spiritual things and business startups. I thought to myself, I'm a minister with a podcast and some books and videos. I need to read this guy's stuff and learn from him. So I contacted him, and he got back to me immediately about letting me interview him for my podcast. Today, I'll be asking him about what he's doing and how he's helping other people build sources of income to support their purpose. All this and more on the Rob Skinner Podcast. Welcome back to the Rob Skinner Podcast. My goal is to inspire you to live a no-regrets life, make this life count, and multiply disciples, leaders, and churches. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rob. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for making the time.
Well, very happy to.
As I shared in the introduction, I was so thrilled to be able to, one, find your book online, listen to it, and read other books, and then I just thought, I'm just going to take a shot here that I can reach out to John and get him on my podcast. Now, you do mention getting on other people's podcasts. So I thought, well, just see if he practices what he preaches. And you got back to me like immediately about jumping on my podcast. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. Glad to.
Now, John, why did you choose ministry?
When I was about 15, I got very serious about my faith. And I remember at that season of life having a desire to serve in some form of ministry, but my desire was not to be a vocational pastor or anything like that. Growing up, I moved a whole bunch of times, and I always kind of had this thought that pastors moved a bunch, and they typically lived in a context that maybe was a bit substandard, and they were frequently broke. And that kind of discouraged me from that because I had already experienced that just in my day-to-day life. And I thought, I don't want to continue this. We've moved so many times and dealt with plenty of financial issues growing up. And I just thought, I don't know that I have it in me to do that again. So I pictured myself being the pastor's right-hand man, but I did not picture myself serving as a vocational pastor. Mm-hmm. And I went to Bible college with the thought that I would get a Bible degree, but would also get an education degree, and my thought was to be a history teacher. Partway through my time in college, I got hired as a local youth director at a local church, and that pastor, first of all, I just very much enjoyed working in that context, and that pastor started giving me more and more responsibilities and mentoring me and inviting me to speak, and after a while, I finally had to admit that I did not have good reasons for not stepping into pastoral ministry. It was very clearly what the Lord had shaped me to do and was calling me to do. And my reasons for running from it were not very good reasons. They were very worldly reasons in my estimation at the time. And I thought, you know what, even if it means I have to make some sacrifices this side of heaven, I've got to be obedient to what the Lord's calling me to do. And by the time I was finished with my time in college, I had purposed in my heart that I was going to serve in pastoral ministry. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
And you're in Pennsylvania. Where in Pennsylvania are you?
I'm in the southeast corner of Pennsylvania. So not too far from New Jersey. So I'm about 15 minutes from Trenton, New Jersey. But we're in the southeast corner. So kind of, you know, about 40 minutes from Philadelphia, 15 minutes from Trenton, right in that spot.
Now, when I was listening to your story on from the podcast. It sounds like it's a pretty small church when you started, not a pretty rural area. Can you describe it?
So where we're at is it's not very rural. Like, it's a pretty decent populated area. When we started the church about 16 years ago, we were starting with just a handful of people. So many of the early Sundays, it's a replant situation. The previous church closed, and so my family moved here to start a new church. And so many of our earliest Sundays, there were six members of my family and usually about six other people. So we could two cars was enough to basically get everybody that was going to be there. And by God's grace, in time, the church has grown. We have now exceeded the capacity of our building, so we're actively looking for another building. We have in the low 200s as far as how many people are actively involved in the church, and really grateful for what we've had the opportunity to see. The Northeast here is not known for being a highly spiritual area, so right. Church planting here is a very unique thing, but God has shown his favor on what we're doing, and we're really grateful.
That's fantastic. Now, how'd you meet your wife?
We actually met in college, and I still remember at one point having a conversation with her about just a term paper that I was working on as we were both walking toward our dorms. Her dorm was, less than like 200 feet from where my dorm was. And so we found ourselves walking in the same area and having that conversation, but she wasn't on my radar at that point. And I remember one point, my roommate and I, we thought it'd be funny to just put comical pictures on our student IDs. And he changed his picture to, I think, like a famous basketball player. And I changed mine too. I took I clipped something out of a magazine. It was an ad for a dentist, and it was just a tooth that was smiling. And I pasted it over my ID, and I thought it would be really funny when I tried to sign into things like getting into the cafeteria for my meal plan if I showed that ID to the person working the counter. And my wife was working the counter in the cafeteria. So I showed her my ID, and I thought for sure she'd think this was funny. And she didn't. And I remember going over to the counter to get my food and just thinking, I actually said in my head, I was like, that woman has no personality. And just kind of left it at that. And, she has no memory of this whatsoever. And soon after that, as I got to know her, I was like, oh, no, she very much has a personality. And maybe she just didn't think my joke was all that funny after seeing 100,000 IDs, every given day when she has to log people in. But in time, I realized she is exactly the person that I want to be with. She's the person I want to marry. And now I've got to figure out how to make this girl like me, because I sure like her. And thankfully, it all worked out. In May, we'll be celebrating our 26th wedding anniversary. And the Lord's blessed us with four children. They're all adults now. Our oldest is 23. Our youngest is 18. Two girls and two boys. And it's just been a wonderful time the Lord's blessed us with together.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Now, what got you into your online business? Was it based on interest or necessity?
There's a little bit of both, depending on where you put the starting point. So growing up, I always had an interest in creating content. I used to dream as a child about being a radio DJ. And even as a young person, I used to dream about writing books. So I had this idea of writing and recording. I just loved creating content like that and doing things like that. And early in my ministry, I had the opportunity to also work as the announcer and the production director for a Christian radio station that wasn't too far from the church that I was serving at the time. And I used to work there Monday through Friday from 7:30 in the morning till 12:30, right after lunch. And that gave me a great experience in just being on air and editing digital content. This is before podcasting, anything like that. This is in the very early 2000s, so this is right around 2001. And right around that time, I wrote my first book as well, but it wasn't easy to distribute a self-published book. So basically, I wrote the book and I had copies. And if I knew you, you could get a copy off me, but there weren't too many distribution options that I was aware of at the time. And I didn't have a book deal, nothing like that. It was just personal interest. But then you fast forward some years And you get to about 2014, and at that point, we're already in the process of planting the church that we currently serve. I started serving here in 2008, and a few years into the process, the church got to a spot where it was just a young church plant and really could not pay me a consistent salary. They wanted to, they tried to, but our budget really didn't allow for that. And the church was trying to be as generous as they could be, but the truth is the budget really did not allow it. And I still remember our treasurer coming up to me with tears in his eyes saying, "We can't pay you. We want to pay you." He even offered to loan me money from his own pocket just to meet my expenses if I found myself in a financial bind. And I said, "No, that's not going to be necessary. It'll be fine." But in my heart, I was a bit worried about this because I thought at the time I really only had one source of income, and it was my paycheck. And my wife hadn't re-entered the workforce yet. You know, she wasn't at a spot where she was working full time. Once we had, when we had kids, she had been teaching prior to us having children. But once we had children, she took a break from teaching and stayed home with our children, which is something we very much wanted her to be able to do and something she wanted to be able to do. And so really, we just had one source of income, and it was my salary. And I remember praying to the Lord in a parking lot. I had gone to a store. I needed something. And before I walked into the store, just praying to the Lord and asking for him to show me what to do next. And he gave me peace in my mind and in my heart about this idea of just doing more writing. And so I started doing more writing. And around that time, Kindle Publishing, so their KDP platform that is connected with Amazon, started making it really just really easy for people to start writing self-published books and making them available on the Kindle platform. And so I tried my hand at that, using some fresh content, but then also using some content from some of my sermons and other things that I had prepared, Bible studies, things like that. And I started putting them up on Kindle, and by God's grace, they started selling well and supplementing my income. I also, at that time, started getting opportunities to do some voiceover work. And so it was doing voiceover work and writing these Kindle books that was supplementing my salary while the church couldn't pay me an income. So it was a very interesting thing to watch how the Lord supplemented my income during that time through those sources. And at that point, I had no thought of doing all the other things that I'm doing right now. I just was trying to kind of get by and pay for things. At the end of 2015, I started really getting into listening to podcasts because at that point, Apple had updated their iOS system. So on the iPhone, all of a sudden you had podcasting as a native app. And I started listening to podcasts regularly. And I thought to myself, you know, with my background in voiceover and radio, I don't need to just be a consumer of this content. I could start creating some of this content.
Right.
And so I started creating content at that point. And then at that point, I had books and podcasts and was kind of off to the races as far as creating online content. And everything developed from there. It was a whole process, a gradual process. But the things that I'm doing now were kind of birthed in that season and expanded over time.
You've got a great voice. I mean, you have the radio voice, or I could imagine you being the announcer for movie trailers in a world where you've got that type of skill. Was that learned, or is that something you've always been gifted with?
That I think it's a little bit of both. I remember the summer between sixth grade and seventh grade when my voice changed. And I remember showing up for seventh grade and all my friends making a big deal about the fact that my voice got really deep over the summer. And I hadn't even noticed, because for me, it was just a gradual thing. And they started making fun of me, and they'd walk around and purposely make their voice deep. And they're like, "Who am I? I'm John Stonge. Listen to me." And so I was like, okay. And I remember in the next year in eighth grade, calling one of my friends. I called my friend Mike, and I didn't know his family. And Mike's mother said to him at one point, she said, "Mike, I really need you to start hanging out with kids your own age. I think it's like odd when you have these older kids calling." And Mike was like, "Mom, I'm older than John. Jeez, he's like 3 months younger than me." And she's like, "Oh, come on. I don't believe that." And so I had to come over to Mike's house and introduce myself to his family so Mike and I could hang out with his mother, feeling comfortable with that, because she was convinced I was older. And, And so there's certain aspects that are just, I mean, this is just, you know, something the Lord blessed me with, but you also have to kind of hone those blessings in the sense of learning how to present yourself publicly. I grew up in Northeast Pennsylvania near Scranton, and I love Northeast Pennsylvania, the coal region there. I think the best food I've ever had in the world comes from right where I grew up. And I just love the people where I grew up. But all of us who grew up in that area can admit that there are some odd and funny things that we say and ways that we pronounce things. So it's taken me time to correct some of those traits. And sometimes they still sneak out. So that's why I say it's a little bit learned and a little bit natural, or a gift from God, we should say. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of both in the mix of that.
In your book, Podcaster's Playbook, you talked about how you came up with the idea to read a chapter of the Bible every day and then say a prayer after that. And that's led to a podcast that's, I mean, in the millions in downloads. I mean, talk about a masterstroke. I was just sitting there going, wow, that is pure genius. How did you come on to that idea? Like, was it just a moment or something you carefully planned?
So I have a habit of reading a chapter of the Bible and praying when I first wake up each morning. And I try to make it a rule. I don't do this perfectly, but I do this most days. I get this right most days. I don't feel right if I don't do this. I wake up and I have a rule where I say, all right, the temptation to check my email and texts and social media and all that is there, but don't check those things and get swept up in that world before you just sit down for a moment of just read one chapter of God's word and then have a time of prayer. And then you can read whatever you want. You want to check your social media, if you want to check the news, whatever you want. But start with a chapter of scripture. So that was my personal habit. And then, around the time where I started the Chapter a Day audio Bible podcast, my kids were at that point starting to use smartphones. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be neat if I made a podcast where instead of just reading that chapter to myself, if I record it, I'll turn it into a podcast, and then it could be something that my kids listen to on the way to school, or my friends can listen to, or the members of our church could listen to. Because so many people feel intimidated when you say, you know, we should read the Bible, and they look at it and they say it's huge. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if I just break it down into a chapter a day like I'm doing as a personal habit, I could just do that out loud, turn it into a podcast, and maybe other people would like it and utilize it, because it seemed to me like the type of thing I would utilize. I knew of podcasts where people were taking large chunks of the Bible and recording them. I just didn't know of anyone doing it the way I did it for my personal study. And I thought, well, what would it hurt? And so I started recording it, and it ended up being one of the biggest things I ever got involved in. It took on a life of its own. The Lord chose to bless it. And I'm amazed when I hear from people all throughout the world that make it part of their daily pattern. And it's something that I've been directly involved in doing since the end of 2015, and I've never missed a day. I hope I never miss a day with that show. I don't want to skip a day. So it's every day since the show started, we've produced an episode.
It's a masterstroke. I just was so impressed by that. At what point did you think, I really have something that can help other people? What I'm doing can really benefit other people.
I always had a sense that it could. It's just a matter of whether people would discover it and use it. And it was when it started catching on, and I would hear from, it would start off with people that I knew that listened to it. And then it went from people that I knew to people that I had no idea how they'd even found it, that would sometimes message me and let me know that they used it, or just express a word of encouragement or a word of thanks. And I thought, you know what, this is something people really seem to appreciate. I ought to dedicate more time to just be focused on making this the best that it could be. And I remember I upgraded my audio equipment and just developed more of a rhythm of how I was doing it, and tried to be more intentional to connect with my audience. And all sorts of things like that. But people started, and I guess maybe the answer to your question is once people I didn't even know started contacting me, then it started to really dawn on me that I had come across something here that had some potential to be more helpful than maybe I initially realized.
Right, because you're helping at multiple levels. One, just their personal devotion, but then secondarily, and you're helping other people to develop their own sources of income and all sorts of things. So one thing that I couldn't help but think is, how do you balance your church work and your online work?
The way that tends to work for me is most of my online content gets created on the margins of the day. So I'm typically creating it either early in the day or late in the day when I really have no obligations to anybody. A lot of my content has been recorded or written or, you know, produced when my family is asleep. I'm usually the last one to go to bed at night. And so I'll create content or record content when my house is quiet at the very end of the day, or I'll create it very early in the morning when no one else is awake. Mm-hmm. And I have an office in my basement. My basement is nice and quiet, and that's where I'm talking to you right now from. The ceiling down here is low. It's a finished basement, so it's got carpeting, and I've got a low ceiling, and it makes for a real good recording environment, and it doesn't pick up outside noises or anything like that. And so I would oftentimes just come down into this basement office area that I created and record down here either late at night or early in the morning, and it really doesn't conflict with anything because those are times of day where my phone's not ringing and my family is not needing me for anything. And at this point now, all my children are adults. My youngest just turned 18 a few months ago, so they don't tend to need me for much at this point anyway, at least as far as their day-to-day needs go. And it has created the opportunity for me to do that. And it doesn't conflict when I do it that way. It doesn't conflict with my pastoral responsibilities. I also teach as a professor at a local college. And because those are things that take place in the day or in the evening, doing this on the margins of the day really seems to fit.
What are you teaching at the university?
I teach two things. I teach classes on Bible and theology, and I also teach classes on digital media. So in the fall, I'll be teaching a class on podcasting. I also teach courses that teach people that are in the creative arts how to make a business or an income from their creativity. So it's like some business classes. I teach communications, public speaking, all sorts of things like that. So it's a mix of Bible and theology. Half the classes I teach are Bible and theology, and the other half of the classes I teach are in media and communications.
So interesting. What's the name of the university?
Cairn University, C-A-I-R-N.
Okay.
And it's a great Christian university here in Southeast Pennsylvania. 8 minutes from where I live, and I am a graduate of Cairn University. That's the very university that my wife and I met at.
Wow. Now, you talk in your book, Build, Grow, and Monetize Your Online Platform, about having a purpose driving your business. What's yours, and why is that important to a person?
So, for me, the ultimate purpose for everything I'm doing is to glorify God. That's what I want to do. I want to glorify God, and then as He opens up doors for me to walk through doors and serve Him in whatever way, I want to be someone who makes a habit of saying yes. I don't want to be running from God. Mm. I want to run toward God. And so that's my purpose, but I think that's the purpose for every Christian. And I think the Lord gives us opportunities to glorify Him in all kinds of ways. When it became clear to me that He had designed my personality and the natural gifts that He had given to me to communicate, I thought to myself, well, it would be poor stewardship of these abilities if I'm not using these things to glorify Him in this capacity. He's clearly wired me and designed me to do these types of things. So this is how I'm going to glorify Him. And it becomes very, very purposeful in my mind as I'm trying to help people grow in their relationship with Him and recognizing that I'm a communicator. He has made me a teacher. He has gifted me to teach and instruct and mentor. And so these are things that I'm going to do, and I'm going to try and be the best steward of these opportunities as I can be, knowing that there'll be a day when I give an account before him for my life, and I don't want to waste the time or the gifts that he's given me to do these things. And I think for all of us, it's wise to take an assessment of, all right, if the Lord wants me to glorify him with my life, which he does, and that's true for all of us, what opportunities, what experiences, what natural talents, what spiritual gifts, what has the Lord entrusted to me that I'm supposed to be a good steward of so that I glorify his name and serve the most people I possibly can with the gifts that he's entrusted to my care. And that makes the ways in which we serve more than just momentary things. When there's a deeper level purpose to it, I think we can stay motivated to do those things even on days when, naturally speaking, maybe we wouldn't feel like doing it.
Mm-hmm. So taking personal inventory and figuring out what are my talents and my interests, and then trying to tie that in with, okay, how can this be pleasing to God? How has God made me?
Right.
Really interesting. One of the challenges I've found is juggling so many communication platforms, mm-hmm. podcast, social media, website, newsletter, blog, YouTube. You talk about all these different things in your book. How in the world do you manage it?
That's one of the main questions I get, because people look at what I'm creating on a daily or weekly basis and they see I have two primary platforms. So my faith-based content, you can see that at BibleStudyHeadquarters.com. My business-based content, that's at PlatformLaunchers.com. And so when people look at that, they're saying, all right, for two different platforms, you are producing blog posts, you are producing audio, you're producing video. We see the podcasts, we see the courses, we see memberships, we see all these things. How is this happening? How do you have time to do this? And what I've discovered is that, and then they also see the books. And I think that's how you said we got connected. So they're thinking, all right, most people during the course of their life hope to write one book. And they see, all right, you've written multiple books. How are you doing this? And what I tell people is that I've discovered how to take one thing and then use it multiple times. Mm. And that one thing can become many things. So I'll give you an example from the faith-based content that I create. So for nearly 26 years now, I've been a pastor. And one of the things that as a lead pastor, I'm responsible to do each week is to prepare and preach a sermon. And it used to frustrate me that I would spend so much time preparing these sermons and then I would preach them. And basically, if you were there to experience that live, you heard that content shared. But other than that, it went into a file and oftentimes did not reemerge from that file. Mm-hmm. That was it. Yep. It was a lot of time, a lot of effort. One-time use,
right?
And that was it. And that felt like poor stewardship to me. And I started thinking, you know, how could this be used in more than one way? And what ended up happening was I realized that as I prepare that sermon, I can then preach it before our church family. And while I'm preaching it, I record the audio that I then make into a podcast. And our tech team records the video, and that goes up on YouTube. And then I take my sermon notes and I turn them into a blog post. And then I also use those sermon notes I take a portion of them and I use that for a weekly newsletter. And then I save those because I typically preach on series, you know, like I'll have a series or a topic that I'm preaching on for a longer period of time or a book of the Bible that I'm preaching on. And I'll compile those and I'll use those as future book chapters. Mm-hmm. And really what I'm doing is one thing that I'm using multiple ways. That one sermon becomes something I teach live, and then it becomes an audio podcast, it becomes a video, it becomes a blog post, it becomes a newsletter, and it becomes a book chapter. But really, I did one thing, and I just used it multiple ways. And I typically refer to that as my content waterfall, where you take one thing and a whole bunch of things come off of it. And I discovered that that's a way that I could reach people in a variety of ways through one piece of content. But I also do that with my business platform. Each week, I create one blog post for Platform Launchers, and then I teach that content live to our members club. And then that content immediately becomes, it's recorded and it becomes a podcast. It becomes a short form video that I put up on YouTube, a long form video with Q&A that only our members get. And I also save that content for future book chapters, but it also becomes, it goes live as a blog, and then I take a portion of it and send it out to my email list, so it becomes a newsletter as well. And if I really want, I could take snippets from it and use it for social media. But it's really one thing that I'm repurposing five or six additional ways, and that's how all those different things come into being.
That was such an epiphany when I was reading that. I thought, oh my gosh, that is so smart. I mean, sitting there thinking about all the sermons I've written over the past 35 years or something, I mean, so much wasted. Just, I mean, it's since the computer, I've got it still digitalized somewhere, but I mean, so much effort put in there for just one appearance. And I just thought that was just absolutely, it was a total game changer for me. That's one thing I just really loved, that concept of building off of one single blog post. What you say there is a content waterfall. That's a great, great phrase. I started doing that this past week. It was a game changer. And I wrote a blog, and then I used it for my midweek lesson and then recorded it on my podcast. And it was great. I mean, it was just the beginning. I thought, okay, this is something so, so useful. Really, really, really powerful. Thank you for sharing that. In the wake of COVID, many churches' giving has gone down. Many churches have slowed down in their giving or stopped. We've lost members across the board, regardless of denomination. It's a cause for concern for many ministers. I mean, there are many young ministers that I talk to or hear about, they'd like to serve in the full-time ministry or some type of missionary work, but they're afraid because of the monetary aspect or the difficulty. How could your business or what you're offering offer a solution to that?
Pastors are really in a good spot if they want to be somebody who has a message-based online platform that can be a source of income. For many people, they never see a source of income come from it because they don't stay committed to it. But for those that stay committed to it and are willing to stick with it even before it's a source of income because they have a higher purpose for it, tend to also have opportunities to monetize what they're doing. And I like to encourage people, as long as they can do so ethically, to at least consider certain monetization options, because there are expenses that come with hosting an online platform. You're going to have, you know, expenses for equipment and then all your hosting and things like that. So it really does help if you can earn at least something from it. But for many people, this can be a form of digital tent making in the modern era, where you have the Apostle Paul and Aquila and Priscilla funding the type of ministry they were doing. We see in the book of Acts through tent making. I look at this as a form of modern day tent making that can free people up to serve the church for free or very little because they have another source of revenue. And so if you're consistently creating content and then sharing that out there, that's valuable. And if you develop an audience that regularly listens to your content or reads your content, there are a variety of ways that you can ethically monetize that to serve additional people. So some of the things that I recommend to people is that they consider, if it's appropriate, you can utilize like different sponsorships or ads on a podcast. You can do that sort of thing. I'm part of a podcasting network, and so they manage that for me. And that's kind of a recent development with some of my podcasts, but they run ads on them. And then there's a revenue split that happens with that. And that's certainly a nice check to receive during the course of any given month. I've also had people reach out to me to say, hey, I notice that you blog regularly and you've got an email list built up. What would it cost to run an ad on your website or on your blog, like a text ad or a block ad or a picture, something like that? And so there are people that pay for that sort of thing. There are people that if you decide to run an online membership community. There are people that are willing to pay monthly fees to be part of your membership community where you mentor them in the things that you're proficient at. And then that becomes a source of revenue. You could also develop courses if you're somebody that enjoys teaching. So that's something that I enjoy doing as far as, you know, monetizing content that way. There are ways that you could do this via webinars as well. There are also, if you're a prolific writer, you can write and self-publish books. So there's all sorts of ways that you can monetize the content you're creating. And the nice thing is it can relieve some of that pressure that a local church might feel. I remember just the look in the eyes of my treasurer when he had to tell me that he could not pay me, that our church could not pay me. And I remember just how happy I was some years later to be able to have a conversation with my church elders and let them know that paying me was now optional. If they were able to pay me, that's wonderful. But if they were not able to pay me, I accepted that and would continue to serve the church regardless, because I felt like this is what God wanted me to do, because the Lord had provided income for me and for my family from other sources. So it was a very interesting development that took place.
It's wonderful to have the freedom to be able to support yourself and do ministry. I did that in planting a church in Oregon back in 2004, 2005, and it was great. I mean, there's limitations because you have to maintain your day job and then you're preaching on the weekends, but it's really, really powerful. But I'd like to dig into that a little bit more. How do you as a minister navigate the questions surrounding receiving support for your business enterprises? I mean, there's people looking at you. You've got a congregation of 200 or so. What's your view on those things? How do you manage that?
I'm thankful that I haven't had really any conflict with that. Our church family very much is well aware of the things that I do online and has been very supportive of it, because, you know, I think they look at it and you realize if you can earn an income from some of the things you're doing online, it actually gives you the opportunity to serve people more in that capacity. And I also make a point to just be very open and transparent about those things. And so if anyone ever has a question about it, but, you know, I'm happy to talk about it. But I think as long as you're doing things ethically, people tend to celebrate in our present day culture. If you're entrepreneurial and you're serving people and you're coming up with different ways that you could provide solutions that allow you to minister in the marketplace and in the local church. In my case, I feel like people have really celebrated it. And the cool thing is with different people that have businesses in my church or people that are entrepreneurial, it's given us an additional thing to talk about. I really haven't had any conflict with it. And I think I've noticed, and you probably noticed this too, anytime you're in a position of leadership or influence or church leadership or whatever it may be, people have opinion about everything you do. People have opinions about it, right? And I've spent my entire adult life recognizing the fact that there's literally nothing I do that someone doesn't have an opinion about, whether I tuck my shirt in or whether I don't, whether I comb my hair one way or another, whether I wear this particular color on a Sunday or a different color. It just doesn't matter. So anything I do, someone's going to have an opinion about. Now, I have to give a lot of credit to my church. My church really does not pick on me or nitpick me. They literally do not do that. They're a truly a wonderful group of people, and I'm grateful. I know that is not every pastor's experience. Some pastors really work in and serve in difficult contexts where they get ripped apart constantly. But in my context, I just thought to myself, people are going to have opinions about everything I do anyway, so I just need to be square with the Lord. I need to be certain that what I'm doing is what the Lord wants me to do. And as long as I'm doing what the Lord wants me to do and I'm operating honestly, with integrity, ethically, in any business enterprise I choose to engage in or any ministry that I choose to serve in, these are things I'm going to come before the Lord and give an account for my life. So as long as I'm on track with him, if someone has an opinion about it, they are entitled to have their opinion. I may disagree with their opinion, or I may take counsel from their opinion. You know, if someone has an opinion about something I'm doing and they want to share that with me, I try and stay very teachable. I don't harden my heart toward that, but I just haven't had a whole bunch of people nitpicking me for selling advertising on my website, or for getting paid to host a webinar, or for hosting a membership community where I mentor people and I earn an income from that, or for selling courses online. Because there's nothing wrong with those things. They're just ethical ways to earn an online income that serves the marketplace. So I'm very thankful for that. But I do know that there are plenty of pastors that probably feel nitpicked in their context and might feel hesitant to get involved in things like that. And I completely respect that as well. It just hasn't been something that thankfully I've been, picked apart for doing.
Are you receiving support from your current church?
Yes, they do. I do receive a paycheck from my church, but they know that at this point that that's an optional thing.
Great. And then one thing I wanted to ask you, if a person is just getting started and they hear some things, you know, there's a lot you're throwing at them, but they want to get started, what would be the best, let's say, first three steps to develop a tent making platform?
So can I give you five? I know you only asked for three. Can I give you five?
Of course, no problem.
I have five D's that I recommend to people. And the first one is this: start with discovering your message. So, you know, I look at it and I think, all right, what's my message? What do people tend to ask me about? And what do I get excited about teaching people about? And it's twofold. I get excited about teaching people the scriptures because that helps them in their walk with the Lord. So I love teaching the Bible. I love teaching theology. And so I have a platform that's all about that. But I also get excited about teaching people about online business and how online business can be a form of ministry and a form of income. And I've discovered that these are two areas that people tend to ask me a lot of questions. They want to know about the online stuff. They want to know about scripture. And so I've discovered my message. My message is twofold. It's both of those things. It's also what I teach at the university, teaching Bible and theology, but I'm also teaching media and communications. So that's my message. That's what people have already indicated they want from me. So I'd encourage people, start with that. Discover your message. What do people actually ask for your counsel on? The second is, pick which ways you want to deliver that content, because there's lots of options, and you won't want to do all of them. So you may be listening to us on a podcast right now, but not really feeling like you personally are called to make a podcast. Maybe you're going to deliver your content more in written form or in video form or in all of the above. Maybe you're going to be more of a social media person. I am not much of a social media person. I use it, but it's mainly just to be connected with my friends. I don't use social media for my business all that much. Maybe that'll change someday, but I really don't use social media for business purposes. I mainly just use it relationally. So I'm not delivering my content primarily through social media. I'm using podcasting, blogging, YouTube, stuff like that, books. So that's number two. That's deliver your content. Number three is develop your tribe. And that's really just this idea of serving the audience that the Lord entrusts to you. So, if you say you're going to show up for a podcast, show up for it. Mm-hmm. If you have an email list where you regularly send information to people via the email list, that's great. Do that. Develop your tribe. Deliver the content that you told them you're going to deliver. Do it on time, and that ends up developing that audience, that tribe of people that you get to serve regularly. Number four is deploy your team. Some of the things that you're doing, you're going to need help with. And maybe you like recording podcasts, but you don't like editing them. So find someone that you can hire to edit, or trade services where you do something that's helpful to them and they edit your shows for you. Or maybe you create written content and you want an editor. Or maybe you want to have a website, but you don't really want to develop the website yourself because that intimidates you. That's fine. Just find someone who likes making websites and have them do it. But you're probably going to want to surround yourself with a team. So that's number four on my list. And then number five on my list is derive your income. Figure out if there might be ways that you can ethically earn an income from the things that you're doing, and then look into those as options. maybe crowdfunding, maybe selling courses, maybe selling advertising, maybe through a membership community, maybe all of the above. But that at that point, once you've discovered your message and you've started delivering your content and you've developed your tribe, and you've deployed your team, deriving an income tends to be a logical next step. But I usually tell people, don't start with trying to derive an income. If that comes, it comes. Focus more on serving people. And in time, you may have an opportunity to also earn an income, but don't make that your primary motivation. I think it's okay if that's a secondary motivation, but right. I think the primary motivation needs to be glorifying God and serving people. Right. And then in time, it does not surprise me when people who serve other people well end up discovering that this becomes a great way that they could also earn an ethical income through their online content. Mm.
I love the acronym. I love the mnemonics there. That's fantastic. You talk about delivering the content. I just had to laugh, John, because in reading your book and listening to the book on the podcast, you talked about some of your early ventures and you mentioned a YouTube video on how to kill crabgrass or something. Yes. So I had to go to that and go see that. And I go, there it is. I mean, it's interesting the kind of variety of your interests. It's pretty broad.
Yeah, that's been par for the course in my life. My wife gets a kick out of it because she just laughs at how many different things have caught my attention over time. I do have a lot of interests, and lawn care is still one of them. I had no idea when I created that video. That video has almost 1 million views on YouTube at this point. I think probably this summer it'll cross over 1 million views. And I look at that, and even, you know, when we talk about monetization, that video during the summer months, I kid you not, through that video, I earn sometimes between $1,000 and $1,200 a month just from that video.
No way.
Because YouTube pays me ad revenue for that video. It's a 6-minute video on how to kill crabgrass. So I get paid from YouTube, and I also have an affiliate link in the description of that video to the product that I use. And so I earn a commission on that affiliate link as well. And during the winter months here in Pennsylvania, it doesn't earn me much of anything. But during the summer months, there are times that it's earned me $1,000, $1,200, something like that in any given month through a 6-minute video I created. And so sometimes I look at that and I think there's opportunities out there. They abound. Sometimes it's in some of the most unsuspecting circumstances. I had no idea that that would turn into a source of revenue like that from just one video, but there it was.
I just had to laugh. I'm in Arizona, so couldn't be something I would imitate, but I just thought it was hilarious. I didn't even understand what the type of plant you're talking about was. If someone were interested in finding out more, what you're offering, trying to get help in developing a side hustle or, you know, additional income, where would they find you?
The best place to go is platformlaunchers.com. And something I'll point out to them, if you go to platformlaunchers.com, right on the homepage, you'll see something I have there as a free download. It's something I call the 21-Day Platform Development Planning Guide. And it'll walk people through those 5 Ds that I just mentioned and help them just kind of plan out an idea if they're thinking about developing an online platform based on the message that they care most about. It'll help them structure that and come up with some ideas, and they can download that planning guide for free right off the homepage of the website.
Okay, terrific. Platformlaunchers.com. Finally, what advice would you give to a person who wants to live a no-regrets life and make this life count?
I would say walk through whatever doors the Lord opens up for you, because he will surprise you somewhere along the way. There are all sorts of things that I'm presently doing, whether it be online platform content creating, even serving in pastoral ministry, that when I trace it back, it really just came back to saying yes when the Lord provided the opportunity and made it clear to me that I was supposed to walk through that door. So you walk through the door, you don't always know how it's all going to work out. But if you just make a habit throughout the course of your life of saying yes to God, he'll show you some amazing things. He'll let you do some amazing things. You'll get to experience things that are far beyond what your expectations initially were. And I have learned that the more I say yes to him, the more delight I seem to experience in life as well. And so I'm grateful that he gives me the opportunity to serve him like he does.
John, thank you so much for joining the program. It was great talking to you.
Rob, it was great to chat with you as well. Thanks so much for the invitation.